Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Yeah, you're welcome, Max. So we are looking back on the weekend's rugby. Our rugby coverage, as you've heard there, with thanks to Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. We are live, as you might expect, on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope. Send us in your thoughts, comments. You could be named our Heineken Star comment of the week. Andy Dunn in studio, how you doing?
Well, God, I don't know what Periscope is, so I really feel my age. Is that a new social media platform or something?
It's not even remotely new.
Okay, there you go.
So there you are.
I know what Facebook is anyway.
Good, so. Good. Facebook's hanging around. There are people watching you in Periscope right now, believe it or not, Andy.
Very good. Mm.
Leinster 24, Munster 9. In many respects, this game is being talked about as an incredibly demoralising one for Munster in that they lost 16-15 at the same stage last year. Obviously, their European odyssey seems to be ending in a fairly similar fashion year in, year out. And what's more, they had a full team at the weekend, a pretty nice lead-in time. I appreciate the Felix Jones, Jerry Flannery situation might be a tad distracting, but still, they weren't just off a European Cup final defeat. They'd had a nice lead-up time to get ready for this, and still with some Leinster frontliners on the bench, they didn't score a try. Suddenly, that's a long summer ahead.
Yeah, they are very much lost in terms of where to go, I would imagine, right now. I saw a brief couple of seconds worth of the post-match and the despondency in terms of Peter O'Mahony, what he said, and almost the confusion as like, where, you know, it's very difficult to answer 20 minutes after a game, but where do Munster go? And he said he'd be looking to his leadership group to provide some kind of impetus going into, you know, Johan van Graan was saying late September is a long way away, and you're going to have a lot of that Pro 14 early part of the season going completely under the radar next year with the World Cup. So there's a softer entry into next season for sure, and the hope the likes of Peter O'Mahony has that younger guys will come to the fore and establish themselves as leaders within the group. Mm. I suppose he wants that with a view to improving the group overall, that the backup squad improves in the absence of key players, which I think he's clutching at straws and hoping come semi-final time next year they have a deeper, stronger squad. For me, it's an issue that it's a stylistic issue in terms of how they play. I think it's an issue in how they've been coached. Ironically, I think the closest they got to a definitive style in the last 7-8 years was when Penny was the coach, but he tried too much, too hard, too soon in an environment where arguably the players weren't suited to it or ready to change. Now they're very much in between two stools. They don't play a commanding territory game. They don't play the traditional Raj style kicking game. They struggled on multiple occasions on Saturday in terms of playing an offload game or just basic handling game where they technically didn't quite perform to a level you'd expect in a Pro 14 semi-final. So they're very lost.
Yeah.
And with the loss then of Jerry and Felix, who comes in and coaches, you know, how do they get good coaches in a market where coaches know they're going to be in huge demand because they need to start the season? So they're in a real pickle.
Yeah, they sure are. And even on the coaching front, so say someone like Larkham has been talked about, one of the big pluses in his favour is that he would be available to come in effectively now for pre-season ahead of the World Cup, whereas so many coaches won't be able to arrive until the battered frontline players are getting back from the World Cup as well. And then suddenly you're trying to reshape what you're describing as a lost almost team philosophy. And that's very difficult to do with a Champions Cup game a week or two after you get home from a World Cup.
Yeah.
So that puts a real onus on getting somebody, at least one coach in ahead of the World Cup of a certain quality. And for Van Graan, who's still only 39 years of age and probably trying to figure this whole thing out, for him to try and shape the future of what they're doing on the field, he needs people around him that he trusts and values and can respect and have, you know, go for coffees with his fellow coaches. And so what do we do here? How do we improve our attack? At the moment, he's like, who the hell are my coaches? Couldn't really be much worse.
No, I don't think it could. And I think the Munster public are probably as crestfallen and disappointed as they've been in memory since I've been alive. Munster rugby was to the fore as I was a teenager and as I played against them in my 20s, all through my 20s as a professional, and indeed never was on the winning team against them. But that was their dominant years. But they had a definitive style. They had an identity to how they played, and it wasn't just kick to the corners, stick it up your jumper. You know, that's a huge disservice to the quality they had. But I think they had a very, very identifiable style, and it was, you know, a hugely dominant pack. A brilliant tactician in Rog, who would squeeze teams in terms of tactical kicking. And when you cracked and choked the team, they had distribution, they had speed, they had ingenuity. Right now, they're very, very in between the stools. They're not playing the territory game well, they're not playing the kicking game well, and they're not playing the handling game well. It needs a coach, whether it's Van Graan, or Van Graan has the foresight to bring in a Lancaster type figure the way Leo did in Leinster. It needs a guy, I think, with a huge amount of experience who can settle the ship, who's gravitas among the group, who can say, I am absolutely prepared to change how we play, but you've got to follow me, and it's going to be ugly for a few months, but you've got to withstand that. He's got to withstand the press. You've got to withstand the criticism in Limerick and Cork and elsewhere. You need a group that buys into an attacking philosophy as well. And I think, you know, even when you look at the likes of Klopp, when he came in Liverpool, you take how charismatic he is, but he was very definitive about the style he wanted to play, and it's something you can probably, in a couple of seconds, you can identify how they're trying to play. And people buy into that because it gives them direction.
Yeah.
They seem rudderless in many regards, and I think they're all just hopeful for some saviour to come in. And I personally, I don't think it's Van Graan. If Van Graan brings a guy in, if it's a Larkham or a well-established figure, Woody and myself were talking on air a couple of weeks ago, and the likes of a Wayne Smith. But I think they need a crusader of sorts to come in and change this. I don't think they can change it from within currently.
Okay. And to what extent are their current ills to do with this style of play issue versus just the sheer talent at their disposal in the players?
It's a style of play issue. I'd be categoric.
The talent is there.
They've loads of talent. Absolutely buckets. Yeah. Buckets of talent. They, again, it's a bit of a malaise that has featured in Irish rugby in the last 12 months probably, which is ironic because it's the same style of play that brought us great success, is the run into the opposition as hard as you can, win the physical collisions, you know, recycle ruck ball and eventually exhaust the opposition and break them down defensively, really through brute force, through great accuracy in terms of execution of ruck and things like that. But it's ultimately a, you know, it's not a position of play that has great depth. If you stop a team who does that physically, what else can they do? So I watched Leinster were very, very guilty of it in my mind in the Sarries game. You know, you keep running into the best defence in Europe repeatedly, physically just running in one after another into contact with a view to make space elsewhere.
Yeah.
It's a bit redundant.
Well, the great stat in that game is Leinster either were neutral or went backwards in 88% of their carries. Sean O'Brien, who we all know, he made 12 carries, and out of the 12 carries there was a net gain of 1 metre.
Yeah, and unfortunately CJ Sanders probably the best and worst exponent of that. I mean, he works so hard and it's so admirable, he'll never shirk it. But he, you know, for the amount of carries he makes, the amount of yardage he makes is negligible.
Yeah.
Like Mayweather has, what is he, 49, 50 unbeaten professional fights. He never got a hand laid on him. There are other ways to win in sport than run into people and beat them physically. And if it comes down to a muscle measuring contest only, there's a distinct lack of strategy, of ingenuity, creativity. And it's permeated its way through Irish rugby at key moments in the last year. And I think there's got to be a point where the coaches lighten up add a bit of fun into the environment and allow the guys who are good enough to be on their squads at that level. They had the wherewithal to get there in the first place.
Yeah.
They need some freedom to go out and make a mistake, to do something off the cuff and stop playing by script again and again and again. And while it worked so well with Joe and Ireland for 12, 18 months and it got us to the peak, it similarly got us off the peak very, very rapidly. And it's been, I think, the provincial sides, probably Munster to the greatest noticeable extent, are the ones who've followed suit. Connacht and Ulster have played some phenomenally creative rugby, and Leinster in patches, you know. So
because I did watch, you know, you do watch Munster times and you think, why is Keith Earls just not on the ball more? Whatever way you want to play the game, and I appreciate there's a million different ways to do it, surely we can all sit around if we're planning things from scratch and say we should have Keith Earls on the ball a good bit, shouldn't we? And yeah, you're kind of watching at the RDS and he's a peripheral figure, and I even to me, as a, you know, I'm a million miles off your level of insight, but I'm thinking, surely Keith Earls should be involved here somehow, some way.
Yeah. I think when the game, if you're a facilitator as a coach, where you say, like Fergie did this with United for years, he refused to be overly prescriptive. He would give them a template, he'd give them a shape, and an identity, but it's something that's there to be broken. It's like he wants his best players to go out off script, and he wants his best players to have the confidence to do it. If you had Trent Alexander-Arnold taking a 19-year-old, taking a ridiculous, you know, option of a cross on the corner, but it was the right thing to do, and he obviously felt empowered enough to do it.
But we do see it at times, though, because it's funny. Take the New Zealand game, maybe kind of the peak of this Irish team in November. And we all remember the Jacob Stockdale try. So that was a Joe Schmidt move from 2013, by all accounts.
Yeah.
And it was to exploit that weakness. I think it was McKenzie playing that night.
I think so. But it was brilliant play. Absolutely.
Brilliant. My favourite part about that whole move is, at no point in the move is someone meant to chip it.
No.
And so within that move, within that structure, Stockdale chipped it.
Yeah.
He just saw something feels right here, I'm going to chip it. And he saw the space and bang, and it's one of the best try of the year.
Yeah.
That seems to me the perfect combination. Because I do think the Irish players and the Irish psyche, especially now because they're so in on what Joe Schmidt has brought to Irish rugby. I do think they want structure. I don't think they would feel comfortable going out without definitive structure.
It's vitally important. And like the structure, in a sense, would set you free as well. It gives you the freedom then. You need a baseline, and you can't just, you know, they're not all impressionist artists, just go out and throw paint to the canvas and see how we feel.
Yeah.
You know, you won't win anything. You certainly won't be able to be consistent enough over a Pro 14 season to make a semi-final.
Right, so you're not saying, go out and enjoy it, lads.
No, I'm not. I'm saying, to me, and again, I go back 10 years to when I retired, there was definitely a culture growing in the game where it was a bit of a joy vacuum. You know, rugby needs to be enjoyable for people. While you can sit all week and do 19 hours video analysis and go out and do your contact sessions and talk about winning the collisions and barrels and jackals and all the buzzwords that no one really gets other than the players, it seems to be an environment that is very, very stultified in terms of guys being creative, or there's a suspicion around people who are creative. The Simon Zebos of the world, you know, he's creative, I'm not sure if I trust him. And I don't like it. I don't like the way that has developed slowly in Irish rugby. So you've got suspicion around creativity. Ian Madigan doesn't play in the country anymore. There's a lot of suspicion around Joey Carberry because he did something different every once in a while. We've got to embrace that. That should be the norm. And while Jacob Stockdale had the balls to do a chip kick at 21, and it hasn't been coached out of him yet, it showed that it was one of our pinnacle moments and one of our great moments in Irish rugby. It just needs to be more the norm.
Okay.
Not the exception.
I was going to ask you how quickly Munster can find their way out of this on the field. That depends on the coaches.
To me, I actually think that group has oodles of talent. I can't really gauge how low their mood might be and how easy it is to re-energise that. But to have a coach, I would say, with conviction about the structure and the style with which he wants to play, but also who can empower them to be creative, that's not easily... It's easily said sitting in a studio on a Monday night.
And that coach will need big support from Van Graan. I mean, brave support from Van Grand, because he's into a 3-year deal now and he's a young coach, and there's an element of pressure about the whole thing.
Well, my concern...
And if the coach comes in and says, look, this is the way we have to go, this could get messy.
Yeah.
Van Grand might well think to himself, I can't really afford not to get to at least a Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinal and probably a semi-final. Yeah. How messy is this going to get?
I think it's my neck on the line. Scope to get very messy.
Okay.
Because I don't get the impression he's willing to maybe bring in a guy with more experience. I don't know. It's just an impression I've gotten. If you look at his coaching pedigree and background, his mentor is Heineken Meyer, who's probably the least imaginative coach in European rugby. And if that's Johan van Graan's mentor, we need to be worried. Similarly, if Felix and Gerry Flannery went to New Zealand in the off-season, which was a bold and creative move, which I'd fully welcome, they can't unsee what they saw in New Zealand. And they also can't implement what they saw in New Zealand, because what they saw was embarrassingly simple, in their own words. They saw an environment where players are coached at a high level in terms of skill acquisition and performing your skill under pressure, but a very, very low level in terms of repetitive, prescriptive play.
Okay.
So there, again, you're coming back to falling between two stools, but two guys, I think, who went away and went, wow, I've seen the future and I like the look of it and I can't implement it here.
Regarding the game itself, for people who didn't catch it for whatever reason, Munster were only 3 down at half-time. It was 9-6 at half-time. They enjoyed more possession and more territory across those first 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe that only strengthens the argument they're not doing enough with the ball. Niall Scannell's sin binning didn't help. Giving away 13 penalties to Leinster's 7, almost double, didn't help. And then Leinster scored 2 tries, Sean Cronin and James Lowe. I guess the Cronin try is kind of emblematic of what you want to see.
Yes, it is.
It's forwards, entirely, forwards playing like centres.
It's entirely emblematic of what I'd love to see and saw on Saturday. And it was very, very impressive. In terms of Cian Healy catching the ball and straightening the line to preserve space.
How difficult is that to straighten the line?
Very difficult, very difficult. Really? Running at pace to straighten the line, maintain forward momentum and then pass across your body while holding the defender. So we did all of those things that you'd be proud of as a 10. But simultaneously, Tadhg Furlong was running a pre-called line. He was running these shadow, like decoy lines where the ball's meant to go behind him. Mm. And if you watch that back, it's incredible. He hits on the brakes because he realises Cian Healy's changed tack. So he adapts to what Cian does and reads him. Readjusts his position, almost backtracks, having been running forward, catches the ball and then straightens as well and passes to Sean Cronin. So
there's a plan and then there's if you see something better, go with it.
Yeah, so if ever there was a case to glorify the front row, that is the greatest moment I've seen in recent times. The skill level, the ability to adjust and read the situation on the hoof, change what was pre-called and then execute it. And then Sean Cronin, who's probably our best broken field forward runner, to finish with a right footstep.
He's going to the World Cup, I hope.
I would have hoped so, yeah. I mean, can Rory Best do that?
Josh van der Fleer came back, got man of the match. He wasn't going to be back this season. He had groin surgery, and Leo Cullen was saying he was incredible, wasn't he? He got injured 2 years in a row against France. 1 year does his ACL, the other one does the groin. Huge credit to him.
Yeah.
Van der Fleer was talking about his attitude, and he had a nice little memory of Nasewa. He said, I remember last year he was struggling with a few injuries. I had a good chat with him about it. He'd have an injury and everyone would know it was a 6-week injury, and he would be like, I'm playing in 2 weeks. Everyone knows he's going to be playing in 2 weeks. And that was just his attitude. I tried to have a positive attitude, and he came back and got man of the match. So that's a massive fill-up for them. Is he going to start at the World Cup, all going well? Dan Levy's exit has opened that situation up. And Sean O'Brien, you know, there were glimpses. There were glimpses against Scotland. There were glimpses against Toulouse. And yet there is an ongoing question mark there.
Yeah, I think a fully fit Van der Fleer is odds on to start. Yeah, I think Sean has displayed in fits and starts what he's capable of.
And those fits and starts are so tempting because we know
if
those fits and starts can become consistent, we know what we have.
Yeah, and there's an argument also that you're going into a World Cup and there's going to be a tough selection call there, I think, come the crunch games. Mm. Although Scotland is increasingly looking like the crunch game, the first group game. But for a guy to come back and make 27 tackles in his first game back, it's just phenomenal. Mm. And while he deserves huge credit, I think his support staff deserve huge credit too. His medical team, his physiotherapy, sports med.
Yeah.
They've really taken it kind of to the next level in terms of how they're managing players there. So
well, you don't,
that's it, across the board.
It seems you don't have to play games anymore to get your match fitness.
Which is kind of
frightening.
Yes.
Leo Cullen was kind of a bit miffed at the Johnny Sexton has dropped headlines.
Yeah.
We're doing the rounds, and Felipe Contepomi today came out and said again, Johnny was not dropped.
Yeah.
I want to say, you know. Yeah. So.
I'd say Johnny was miffed as well.
I was just about to say, the reason those headlines were there was it's not often Johnny Sexton has sat on the bench and watched Ross Byrne play.
Yeah.
That you're going back a long way, if ever. I don't know when that's happened before, but you have to appreciate the circumstances, and they're only 7 days after a final. I presume he plays against Glasgow and Parkhead, Johnny Sexton, that is.
Yeah, I would have thought that's a shoe-in to start.
We're not looking
it's
at the
no
start
arm,
of something.
It's no harm having a bit of fun, you know. there's a cheekier side of me that might look at that situation and say, you know, Ross has played three of the last four Munster games that they won, and Johnny started the one they didn't win. And just look at it and say, okay, maybe Ross, horses for courses, has done an excellent job. Johnny's not dropped, but we're being very pragmatic about this.
He's not dropped, but he's not starting.
He's not dropped, but he's also not starting.
There's
messages that you hear.
Yeah.
He's obviously their, first choice, I think, without any question of a doubt.
Yes, yeah.
But I do think they are a very smart and pragmatic management group.
Okay.
And I think they, although it sounds a bit cheeky to suggest that, I think there's an element of Ross needed to start that game from the Leinster strategy think tank.
Glasgow 50, Ulster 20. The general consensus is Ulster were dreadful. Like really poor. Dan McFarlane said, we are disappointed in our own performance. He said, at the same time, I watched that Glasgow performance. I'm not even sure our best performance would have been good enough. Dave Rennie, Glasgow coach, was basically saying, yeah, we were pretty awesome today. Mm. This is going to be a good final. Seven tries they put on Ulster.
Yeah, and they've played, to counter the Munster argument, they've played a very discernible style for about the last six, seven seasons.
Yeah.
That is, when Ansong is almost impossible to stop. And their ability to pass out of the tackle, they use the entire width of the field and they use the entire length of the field at times. We saw for long periods of the Munster-Leinster game, the game played between the 15-metre lines in terms of width and in terms of depth between the two 10-metre lines. So huge portions of the game were spent with guys in blue and red running into each other as hard as they can in that section of the field and getting stopped. And it's hard work to watch.
Yeah.
Where Glasgow can break that game up is their ability to get their hands free and offload. And they do it brilliantly well. So, and again, that's not something you can probably just change tack overnight and say, well, why don't we do that?
Yeah.
You have to learn when it's right to do it, how to create the space either side of the man to do it, how to actually perform the skill to offload. But I think Glasgow have been doing this for five, six, seven seasons.
Again, good at it.
And when it clicks, it is lethal.
Leinster did kill them in a group at pool stage last season, away from home, just killed them up front. So I presume they're still relatively confident. We'll preview that on Wednesday. Clock's pretty much against us here this evening. We've other bits to get to. Somebody says, has it ever really changed? They never passed the ball to Simon Gagan, says Gary in Dublin. Fred McHugh, Andy Dunn, by far my favourite pundit, articulates his views so eloquently. Is a nice point to finish on. There you go. You can take that home, won't you?
Can we send him a book of some description?
Fred's watching on YouTube. Do you know YouTube?
Oh, yes, I know YouTube. He's not on Periscope.
No. Andy Dunn, thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.